here, Warriors HQ podcast, joined as always by Mark Medina, the Warriors beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News and the East Bay Times. It is playoff basketball time, ladies and gentlemen. We have reached the promised land, the first round of the NBA playoffs, and we know who the Warriors' first round opponent is going to be. Finally, it's the Los Angeles Clippers. For the first time since 2014, the two rivals face off in the postseason. Just a bit has changed since that seven-game series in the first round in 2014. First off, Mark, how excited are you? We're finally there. 82 meaningless games bring us to this point.
Man, we got to thank Klay Thompson for speaking into existence. A few weeks ago, he was the only person on the Warriors that was open with saying the thoughts of many in the organization that he would like to play the Clippers because a flight to L.A. is a lot shorter than to San Antonio and OKC. L.A. is a great city, and I agree. I know, Dieter, you're excited, so all's good.
Very excited. I do think that Klay Thompson, as a reader of the East Bay Times, understood that point and brought it into existence because I put it in print. My desire to go to LA over San Antonio and Oklahoma City was so intense that I have been pushing this now for 6 months. I was giddy. We will get to the tricky part of all of this in a second. But first, Mark, I'm curious as to your thoughts on just the series in general. We just saw these teams play on Sunday.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I think that they're the easiest matchups out of who they could have possibly faced against San Antonio and Oklahoma City. But with that being said, you have to give the Clippers a lot of credit. Like, because they tore down everything with, you know, getting rid of the big three, you know, different stages the last few years with, you know, Chris Paul getting traded to Houston, trading Blake Griffin to Detroit after proclaiming him a Clipper for life, allowing DeAndre Jordan to go to the Dallas Mavericks without trying to change his mind and going to his house. I think the thought was, this is going to be a rebuilding team. Like, they're going to be competing for ping pong balls. They just have random players thrown together, and it's been the opposite. Like, they've overachieved, obviously, and they're in the playoffs, but the sum is truly greater than its parts, and they have a really good collection of good role players, players that fit specific needs, and then a lot of young players. And so I think their future is bright. You know, they have a lot of good cap space, so they could be a major player this summer. And I think it just illustrates when you're looking at the NBA as a whole, like, look, I think myself included, a lot of us were anticipating the Warriors would be going to LA for the playoffs, but it would be to play the Lakers, not the Clippers, right? And I think this kind of illustrates that if you want to win, it's not just about getting a superstar, i.e. LeBron James. It's about having good front office people, a good coach, you know, good parts around them to make it hum. So with that said, it's still going to be, I think, Warriors in four, maybe in five, but it'll still be fun because it's LA.
Could not agree with you more. I love what the Clippers are doing in the macro, their ability to get rid of their best player this season at the trade deadline and Tobias Harris. Yeah. And still make the playoffs. In fact, I think they got a little bit better. Don't hold me to that. But
no, they did. I think they've lost three of their last four to close the season.
Right.
But before that, I think they had won 13 of their next 15 after trading Tobias Harris before that trade deadline in February.
And it's not as if something like clicked once Tobias Harris left. I think they just played good ball. And right. Whatever you said there with the sum and the parts and everything, my fiance was wondering how the Clippers made the playoffs because she didn't know anybody on the team. And my explanation was, you know, the fourth best guy on a good team, they have 13 of those guys.
Yeah, that's like a great
that's their entire roster. And there's positivity to be gleaned from that. But ultimately, in the macro, they're not trying to win. You said you can win other ways. I mean, you can make the playoffs. I don't know if you can really do much more than that. This should be a very short series, as you mentioned. I'll be nice and say five, just because Lou Williams is likely to drop 40 something in a game. But ultimately, I mean, the Warriors just have to be tickled pink because there's no way the Clippers, there's no universe in the world where the Clippers beat the Warriors in a seven game series. So much so that I want to make this point. Stephen Curry twists his right ankle on Tuesday in New Orleans, penultimate game of the regular season. Warriors play on Saturday. The Warriors say that Steph Curry is likely to play in that game. We haven't gotten a real update yet, but they're optimistic. They're not ruling him out.
Steve Kerr said he's definitely playing.
He's definitely playing.
Yeah, yeah.
He shouldn't play. They shouldn't put him in that. Don't put him in the game. There's no reason to.
I mean, beyond the fact that you want to win game one. Right?
You're telling me you can't win game one with DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think, you know, the broader point is, like, why risk that in a playoff series? And then number
Why? But here's my bigger point. Why risk Steph's ankle? If he is not 100%, 100%, 100%.
Yeah, that's my thing. His ankle's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. He slipped, and then as soon as he slipped, they took him out. Like, his ankle's totally good. He got iced in New Orleans. He was walking without any crutches. Like, he wasn't limping at all. Like,
no, I wasn't implying in any way that somehow this is a catastrophic injury they're covering up. My point is their ankles, and they're finicky and nasty. And if you can give Steph a week off, a whole week off, that would probably go a really long way. Because let's be honest here, the Houston Rockets loom in round two because of the peculiarities of the final night of the NBA regular season. The Rockets fell into the fourth seed, and now it's the Jazz and the Rockets. Those are two teams in the top five in net rating, and they are going to be the Warriors' second round opponent after they take care of the Clippers. I would want Steph Curry for that series. You don't need Steph Curry for the Clippers. I can appreciate that there's not anything truly wrong, but I doubt that he's in the same condition he was in when he went to New Orleans.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm with you
on
this. I'm with you on this. If there's something seriously wrong with Steph's ankle, they will be cautious with him. But they don't sense that at all with him. Okay. So why sit him, especially in a playoff game? But I think the larger point is a great point. Like, when we're asking the Warriors, who do you prefer in the first round? Like, they didn't want to give teams bulletin board material and that sort of thing. But it does speak to, if the Warriors have this luxury of being choosy, like, it is important to kind of minimize all these, like, different speed bumps, geography being one of them. And I think, to your larger point, does illustrate why they shouldn't just be messing around with this series, like, put it away early, that sort of thing. Fair. Because, yeah, the Rockets were expected to be a team they face in the West Finals, not in the second round. And so, yeah, I think for Steph and for any of these all-stars, if they can build double-digit leads and get them rest, Steve Kerr will do that. And I think that's the message that the coaching staff is going to give them. Like, look, don't just dilly-dally through this series, because this is a team kind of like San Antonio where they don't have star power, so they try to make up for it with hard work and scrappiness. Mm-hmm. The other thing interesting about Steph, like, and again, look, if his ankle's bad, they'll sit him. But
his ankle's not 100%,
yeah,
which I don't think it is. But I am not Dr. Rick Celebrini, so who am I to say?
But what is fascinating is Steph plays really well against these guys, but at the same time, he's going to go up against a guy who is an irritant who likes to do some shady stuff. which is Patrick Beverley. So, healthy ankle or not, like, that is an interesting thing to see of to what extent could that speed bump wear Steph down. I think it'll still be fine. He'll torch him, and because they have four other all-stars on the floor, it won't be a thing. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see Pat and Steph mix it up a little bit in this.
That Rockets series is fascinating, but we can't jump ahead as much as I want to that one. Give me one reason as to why the Clippers could make this. They're not going to win it. There's no circumstance. We could run the simulation 10,000 times. The Clippers are never going to win this series. Give me one thing that's kind of eating at you as to how they can make this a six-game series or so.
Well, I would say it would be two things. One, if they succumb to LA nightlife between games three and four, because
it's undefeated.
Yeah, and they have a 12:30 start game four on Sunday. Look, I don't, especially because it's the playoffs, I don't think the Warriors are going to do that, but they could be due for just a letdown game four game.
We've seen it.
Especially if they're up 3-0. I mean, that happened in San Antonio last year. I would say the number two thing is Lou Williams. Not only does he get his points, and I think there was one game last year where Kevin Durant was like, Lou Williams got a 50-piece nugget on us, McNugget on us. It's the way he gets his points. He gets to the foul line. He does all those herky-jerky things. Mm-hmm. And the Warriors foul a lot. And so I think if the Clippers are going to have any chance of like stealing a game or just making this more competitive than it should be, it will be on Lou Williams' scoring, him getting fouls, and then maybe that contributes to the Warriors' frustrations with calls. You know, as you know, DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, if a call is against them, instinctually the officials are always wrong about it. And
they've never committed a foul in the history of basketball. I will give Kevin Durant an immense amount of credit for this. To get 16 technicals in the regular season and not get suspended, that is some next level stuff. That is like, that is galaxy brain ref complaining, what he was able to do in Memphis on Wednesday night. The only good part of that game, by the way.
And you know what's funny? He was saying, because you know he got a technical for like bumping into the official, but he claimed it was by accident, like he didn't even see him. And also, he said the official was accusing him of like trying to like stalk him toward the scores table when he was simply just wiping his feet off the mat. And he explained to the official afterwards, and he said that the official is going to take it up with the league to get it reviewed and rescinded. So he might, you know, it doesn't make any difference because the playoffs reset, but he might save himself a $5,000 fine.
Well, yeah, I'm certainly concerned about Kevin's wallet, but I did find it just hilarious. It's like, how can you get 16? That shows the level the Warriors are on, that they can pull off stuff like that. Speaking of Kevin Durant, I am fascinated. The one thing I'm looking for, I'll give another thing, but this is the big thing. We've talked about this ad nauseum, so I won't belabor the point, but Durant has been a wonderful facilitator as of late. And you could argue that that has coincided directly with the Warriors playing their best basketball of the season or something close to that. I'm fascinated to see, now that we're in the playoffs, even though it's the first round and it hasn't really kicked in 100% yet, but now we're in the playoffs. The game slows down. Half-court offenses need to execute a little bit more. I'm interested to see if playoff Kevin Durant, the guy who feasts in the mid-range, the guy who is a stone-cold offensive killer, if he's still there. Or if we get this Kevin Durant that we've seen more often than not as of late as the facilitator and the guy who spreads the joy to everybody as sort of the third wheel, but finding his ability to fit in with the egalitarian style that the Warriors had more or less before he got there. That juxtaposition is fascinating. Of course, the Warriors couldn't go wrong in either direction. This isn't to say there's a right or a wrong. They're both right. Whatever Kevin Durant wants to do on a basketball court, more likely than not, is going to be wildly successful. But I am interested to see where his mindset is and how he attacks the game, because of course he's a guy who can do whatever he wants out there. And he lately has been wanting to pass it. And not maybe, you know, take those isolation shots. Now it's the playoff time. Now it's the time to take those isolation shots. We've seen it in the last two postseasons. Certainly he has carried the Warriors, you could argue, in both of those postseasons, not just in the NBA Finals. Be really interesting game one, how Kevin Durant approaches the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. My hunch is that Kevin Durant's going to fall somewhere in the middle where he's not on both extremes for two reasons. A, because the playoffs are a bigger stage, like if Kevin Durant is taking six or seven shots, like that's weird. I don't think that's not.
First take won't have that. Yeah. Even we're going to chip in on that.
Yeah. And I don't think he'll have that either because he sees himself as a scorer. But I think Kevin has gone more one on one mode with the Warriors when Steph and Klay's shots aren't falling. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're going to see is because the game's slowing down, it's a bigger stage, there are going to be more post-up opportunities, more ISO sets, him being a scorer, he will look for that. But I think Klay and Steph are going to be cooking against these guys because they historically have. You know, technically, the Clippers play well on perimeter defense, but because it's the Warriors, like their defensive strategy is going to be let Boogie shoot threes and let Draymond shoot threes.
Right.
And I think more likely DeMarcus, one of them will keep them honest enough, and I think Steph and Clay are just going to go off. So I don't think Kevin's going to have to like go completely like high volume shooting, but he's not going to. If he takes single digit shots in any of these playoff games, whether it's the Clippers or moving forward, like that's going to be very surprising.
And it is interesting because we, you know, I said and you mentioned the game does slow down. It's more half court. It doesn't slow down that much in the first round. The first round is still very regular season ish, at least typically. Sure. And the rotations are typically maintained from the regular season. We're not into the nitty gritty here. Now, maybe in the 4-5 series, it's a little bit different, but teams like to sort of build up that momentum into the playoffs. I'm so happy you brought up the Boogie point because we saw on Sunday and we've seen every time Boogie's played the Clippers, which I think is now three times, twice, doesn't matter. They just let that dude shoot. And DeMarcus Cousins, more than happy to oblige. I don't remember what he did on Sunday. I do remember it was glaring how much they were letting him shoot. And looking at the matchups, they have Zubac, who is not a guy you want defending on the perimeter, but is arguably their best center. You have Montrezl Harrell, who can't handle him on the block. Boogie should have a monster series here if the Warriors want to make that the priority. Of course, the Warriors have so much offensive talent. It's kind of tricky in trying to figure out who you feed the ball to. Hey, Kevin, let's get you 10 post-ups a game. Let's make sure that Steph and Clay get as many open shots as possible, or let's just let Boogie eat. I would almost venture to say, given the fact that you don't maybe want to put as much effort into the first round if you're Kevin Durant and Clay Thompson and Stephen Curry, just let Boogie go. Boogie has, in theory, the freshest legs, having only played, you know, a third of a season, half a season. I'm interested to see how DeMarcus Cousins does it, too, because that's also, again, as you mentioned, the big stage. And if DeMarcus Cousins goes out and has a monster playoff series and the Warriors sweep the Clippers, that's going to go a really long way, no matter what happens from there on out, to helping him get what he came here for, which is that massive long-term contract. So interested to see what Boogie does too.
Excellent point. And I mean, on top of that, you have to look at the reality is this is DeMarcus Cousins' first playoff series. So the symbolism kind of is perfect.
Weird. This is so weird, right?
I mean, Sacramento was awful, right? And then New Orleans before this year, they were good, but he was out with his Achilles injury last year. So, you know, I wonder, does this come full circle? Remember DeMarcus Cousins' debut was against the Clippers with the Warriors, and he was feasting there. Do we see a DeMarcus 2.0 of the whole idea of his presence is something that revitalizes the Warriors? And that's even more dangerous to think about it because he's gone through almost 2.5 months or 3 months of, you know, getting back into shape, getting his time in wind down, you know, fitting into this Warriors team where it's a first world problem, but how does he make most of what he brings while, you know, facing the reality that he has four other all-stars around him.
Right.
But, you know, I think the feeling around the team is that like, DeMarcus not only feels energized with the progress that he's been making with all those things, but this is his first go around. Like, there's a lot of adrenaline going. And I think for the Warriors, like, it's weird to say this because I think that you'll see a little bit of a flip, you know, a switch because it's, you know, playoff mode now. But I think DeMarcus is going to be the most amped up. And I think his teammates are going to be the most amped up if they see DeMarcus at his best. So I wouldn't be surprised, like maybe at least to open game one or the first few games of the series, maybe all of it, that it is kind of their mindset of, hey, like, let's make this about DeMarcus because it's his first go around.
I'll say this Saturday, Warriors are going to open the playoffs at Oracle Arena. I'm also curious to see if the energy that we saw on Sunday in the regular season finale at that barn, if that carries over into Saturday, knowing that it's not the last game, that they'll have at least Monday as well, and probably, you know, a couple of more weeks of playoff basketball at Oracle Arena. But that place was jumping on Sunday. Playoff basketball, of course, a different beast. People are going to be a bit more excited. Even though it's the Clippers, and even though it's a series that they should waltz through, very interested to see what that energy is like, because taking 2 steps, 5 steps, 10 steps back, we're looking at the end of Oracle Arena in real time. We're looking at what is perhaps, some might even say probably, the last playoff run with this truly dynastic head and shoulders above the rest Warriors. We're looking at kind of the end of an era in one way or another, or in both ways. Right. And that could bring some weird juju, not necessarily on the court, because certainly the Warriors have gotten extremely good at compartmentalizing all of that stuff. These are businessmen doing their job. But in the atmosphere, just how charged things get, I'm really interested to feel that, honestly, on Saturday, and just kind of pick up the vibe. Because, as we mentioned earlier, it is very regular season-like, and I do imagine that getting back down to the nitty-gritty, the rotations are going to be fairly similar to what they were in the regular season, if not completely spot on, with the second unit being there and Quinn Cook kind of playing that wing role. What was the takeaway from the final regular season game? Did Steve Kerr give any indication as to maybe how they might approach game one of this series, if anything was going to be changed or tweaked going into it when it comes to who's on the court and who's not?
Yeah, I think that's actually something that I asked Steve before the game in Memphis, the last game. And he said, without sharing specifics, the guys I've been playing these last 2 weeks are the guys that you're going to be seeing on the floor. So obviously we all know that that means the five All-Stars will be playing. Andre Iguodala and Shaw Livingston will be playing. Your guy, Kevon Looney, like those are the top eight guys in the rotation. But as far as the back end, I think that you'll mostly see a combination of Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, and then when the matchups warrant it, some Jordan Bell and some Andrew Bogut. And then, you know, as far as the casualties go, I mean, Damian Lee is not going to be
On the roster.
Yeah, not even on the roster. Like he and Marcus Erickson can practice with the team day to day, but because they're on two-way contracts, they're not available for, you know, playoff minutes. Jacob Evans, hey, he got some time these last two regular season games. He's not getting that kind of time.
You telling me that he didn't make the start? He didn't make the starting lineup after that game in New Orleans.
And he didn't even make the starting lineup against Memphis because they had a different starting lineup with Jordan Bell and Quinn Cook.
Exactly.
And then I think Jonas Jerebko will be scrapping 4 minutes. Like I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't have a big playoff role. I think it'll be, as I mentioned, All-Stars, Iguodala, Livingston, Looney for sure every game, and then you know, it'll be a combination of Quinn Cook, McKinney, Jordan Bell, and Bogut, depending on matchups.
It is interesting, you know, Jordan Bell perhaps breaking into that. We'll have to just see on that one because, of course, it's a matchup thing. The Andrew Bogut not necessarily having a spot in the rotation, which, of course, if you've watched over the last couple of weeks, you've known, like, he doesn't have a spot in the rotation. He's in there as DeMarcus Cousins' insurance, if nothing at all. But that is interesting. I mean, that is truly, for a team that has struggled with depth all year, now they go into the playoffs. We'll see what's up with Steph's ankle, but let's just say they go into the playoffs 100% healthy. Certainly they don't have any injury outside of Damian Jones, who's been injured for so long, we kind of forget he's on the team. The fact that Andrew Bogut, who has been really good since he's gotten in, I mean, solid, not going to put up massive numbers, not going to make a tremendous impact on the game, but he's been super competent when he's played, in my estimation. The fact that he's in a position to where he's just picking up spare minutes here and there speaks to the depth now of this Warriors team, which is something that we could not have said a month ago, honestly, that they had enough depth to where a player of Bogut's caliber is just hanging out.
Yeah, and you compare this to last year. I mean, the Warriors wind up being okay. They won the championship. They won in, you know, that game seven in Houston. But there was, now that time has passed, like the Warriors, a lot of the people on the team are now honest enough to reveal that they felt unsure of things to close the season. Like losing 10 of their last 17. Like there were actual injuries to close out the season there where Steph was out, and then there's all these overlapping injuries with Draymond and Durant and Clay on top of that. Here, I mean, these last two games of the regular season, there were some, like, I don't want to say they were made up, but it was a lot of, hey, if this were a playoff game, you'd definitely be suiting up. Like, even Steph's ankle thing, like, that was more of a, hey, like, let's just be cautious. Like, let's not risk anything moving forward. But other than that, like, everyone is fully healthy. So you know, I think that's interesting. Like, maybe this was to be expected because the Warriors and they have five All-Stars, but just kind of covering the day-to-day, it just felt like there was a lot of stuff this season, whether it was the pending free agency, the Draymond KD flare-up, like the Warriors, yeah, quote-unquote inconsistency, and, you know, what their level of engagement is. But even through all those, like, sausage-making processes that weren't always pretty, you know, up close, like, they came out of it still with the number one seed and they're fully healthy. So, like, it just seems it's going to be fine. Like, I don't want to say it's going to be a cakewalk 16-0 through the playoffs, but
no,
I don't see any, you know, some catastrophic injury aside, I don't see anything that will really stop them significantly.
I am extremely interested in whoever comes out of the East, because I do think that the East has a worthy adversary this year. That's not to say that they will beat the Golden State Warriors in a 7-game series, but it is to say that that could be interesting. Particularly, yeah, Milwaukee interests me. Toronto interests me. Philadelphia interests me. I don't put a lot of stock in Philadelphia, but here we are. That is months away. You look at the bracket as it's currently constructed. Warriors are going to run all over the Clippers. If it goes six, we will pretend that we didn't say any of this stuff. Houston and Utah as the 4-5, mentioned it earlier, those are two top five teams in net rating. I mean, that's a really good matchup. We say Houston is going to be the next round's opponent. There's no guarantee of that, not just because you can't, you know, play the games on paper, but because Utah's really good. And we're going to be watching that. I would not be shocked if that series goes seven. The bottom half of the bracket could not have set up better for the Golden State Warriors, as much as maybe the 4-5 did not go their way. Portland and Denver. Listen, I am a Portland backer, and this is not because of the proximity. I love what Dame Lillard does, but not having Nurkic, CJ McCollum, who the hell knows what's going on there. I'm not buying what Portland is selling, though I'm not buying what Oklahoma City is selling as the sixth seed. That could be a really interesting series for certain. I don't know who I would pick. I guess I'd go with Portland. And then you have Denver and San Antonio. Denver just is totally underwhelming in so many ways. They could absolutely run the Spurs off the court. I can see the Spurs winning that series in six or seven. I don't think that the Warriors, if they get to the Western Conference Finals, are going to have that much trouble getting through to the NBA Finals. I think their toughest challenge will come in the second round against either Utah or Houston. And the downside of getting Houston perhaps that early, if they do get there, is that James Harden won't be as tired as he usually is come the Western Conference Finals, as we've seen. And Lord knows he gets more tired as it goes on. So I think what every Warriors fan should be hoping for at this juncture, don't worry about the bottom end of the bracket. Whatever happens, happens. The Warriors are going to be able to run over any of those teams in five games, probably maybe even four. Get a 7-game rough and tumble series between Houston and Utah. Get as much wear and tear as you can, or hope for as much wear and tear as the Jazz can provide against Harden and Paul, and then the Warriors might actually cakewalk through it. Because I do believe that Golden State has finally figured out, as much as you can, Houston's number. They understand how to play them. You will lose some games in that manner, but they know how to play them. And certainly the game is officiated a bit differently in the playoffs, so James Harden doesn't have as much of his dark arts as he likes to go to in the bag. So this could be actually a cakewalk, but there are factors that need to fall into the Warriors' favor for that to happen, as opposed to in years past when you just looked at it and you go 4-4-4-4, 16-0, let's call it a day. I do think that there's a level of ordination to all of this, but it's going to take a little bit of doing to get there.
Yeah, and you know, you never wish injuries on anyone here, but it's just a reality. Chris Paul is injury prone, and this illustrates the overarching example you were mentioning of if he is going to wear down or something happens to him, like, less likely in the second round as opposed to the final round. And, you know, there's always been debate from the Rockets' end. If he hadn't gotten hurt, like, would have been a totally different series. The Warriors always counter, well, yeah, if Andre Iguodala didn't get hurt, in game four, it would be a completely different series.
They are, the Warriors, by the way, are absolutely certain that that would have been a five-game series had Andre Iguodala not gotten hurt. Like, they're like, they're brash about it.
Oh yeah,
in how they phrase it. I mentioned it one time. I thought I had a third eye somewhere on the top of my head. They were just it was a five-game series. It was a five-game series. So they are not intimidated by the Rockets. But the fact of the matter is the Rockets are the one team that can maybe give them a run in this entire bracket.
Yeah, and you know what? This series, I mean, looking ahead, this will show the value of your guy, Kevon Looney, right?
Because absolutely. 10,000%.
Because I think James Harden, in a vacuum in the regular season and game by game, he is always a threat to do what he does. But I think in a seven-game series, he's less effective, and especially against the Warriors, they have a lot of different defensive adjustments where they put Klay on him for a little bit. They'll put some Kevon on him a little bit because he's held his own when he's got an ISO and he doesn't fall for all those dumb pump fakes that Harden does. And so I think at some point, like, Klay and Kevon might be like the most valuable players in a weird sense.
Not in a weird sense. That's in a very real sense. That's and then you can put Andre Iguodala on him. I think Steph Curry has actually done a pretty nice job. I remember that game that they had without Kevin Durant about a month ago. I hope my dates are right. Everything blurs together.
No, that is true. And I remember there was a play where Harden was trying to do some Harden things on Steph, and Steph just like wasn't having it. He called him out on it.
Steph had a really excellent defensive game. Now, no one will ever play as good of defense. For some, the Kevon Looney run past James Harden as he shoots defense, world class. And I don't know why people don't completely replicate it, but like Looney doesn't even go for the ball. He just puts his hands up and runs past James Harden. We'll get into this. It's my favorite thing about Kevon Looney, and Lord knows I can go on for hours. I don't think that Orlando is coming out of the eastern side of the bracket. I like Brooklyn. I don't see them doing anything. Indiana, congratulations to them for getting the 5 seed, but that actually might be an interesting series, Boston and Indiana. Milwaukee and Detroit. Milwaukee should run all over Detroit in the first round. Do you have a team out of the Eastern Conference while we're in prediction mode that you think gets out of there?
I think it's going to be Boston because...
Whoa! Okay, let me hear it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they have the most talent, and I think now that the games matter, all those chemistry issues will suddenly be wiped away because they're going to have more of an honest effort, and you'll have Kyrie be, you know, the Kyrie of the playoffs as opposed to the diva-ish in the regular season.
Yeah, we know whatever that word is.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be a diva.
But, like, and here's a perfect example of this. Like, they were going through their inner turmoil during a stretch of the season leading up to their game against the Warriors, and all of a sudden, they're playing a nationally televised marquee Saturday night game against Golden State, and they look like a completely different team. Like, I think once they get away all their stuff, you know, mostly perpetuated by Kyrie, like, they're great. Like, there's a reason why Draymond says they're the most talented team in the East, because they are. Like, their self-inflicted wounds were because of all the, you know, the first world problems of Kyrie's, you know, leadership and, you know, kind of the negatives with that and him figuring that out. And then them figuring out, like, they made best of the fact that Gordon Hayward was out last year after the season opener, but they couldn't really figure out how these young players adjust with Hayward back in the lineup. And Hayward, for a while, wasn't himself. I think, for the most part, all those things will be put away. But I would say Milwaukee after that. But I think, other than that, like, I think Philadelphia is not for real. Like,
okay.
I think they're still young. I'm not buying Jimmy Butler. I like
Toronto. We'll see if anyone buys Jimmy Butler this summer.
Yeah, exactly. I like Toronto because of Kawhi, but, you know, everything else, I mean, Kyle Lowry's great, but, like, the whole bench stuff, that stuff goes out the window during the playoffs.
Of course.
So, yeah, I'm all in on Boston.
But you haven't even mentioned the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and I think the team that would give the Warriors the best run, and I don't know if that gets them out of the East, but damn, would they give the Warriors a good run. I'm certain about this. I've seen it for the last 5 years. Somehow the Milwaukee Bucks always give the Warriors a good game. I feel like this is the Giannis party. We're all just getting invited to it this year. Milwaukee is, like, historically good. And I think that they're going to prove it this postseason.
They are. At the same time, a healthy and engaged Draymond does wonders. And
no question. No question. You don't have to tell me, Mark Medina.
Yes, and we didn't see Draymond in any of those Bucks matchups because he was hurt with that toe injury. And so Giannis is going to be Giannis, but I think Draymond can do some stuff to get into him a little bit.
I don't doubt that for a second. So we've now figured out the NBA playoffs. We can take the next few months off, see what happens at the parade. Saturday, let's just go through. We got Saturday and Monday at Oracle Arena, games 1 and 2. Thursday and Sunday in Staples Center in Los Angeles, which good opportunity for Warriors fans who maybe don't want to pay the final games at Oracle prices to get down. I remember you could buy tickets at the door for game 7 of a Clippers-Utah game a few years back. I think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to see a 50-50 crowd at Staples Center, as sad as that is to say during the playoffs. Good news for Warriors fans. And then if it does go 5, they'll be back at Oracle Arena in a couple of Wednesdays. But I think we're both expecting 4 games, 5 if the Warriors have a letdown, and then rest, because ideally for the Warriors, Houston and Utah go seven games deep, and the Warriors don't play again until like May 1.
Yeah, I think as far as the earliest that the Western Conference semifinals could be, I'm looking it up right now here.
Yeah, you would know. I know nothing about this kind of thing.
Okay, let's see. So say the Warriors sweep, the semifinals could begin as early as the 27th of April. So if we're doing the math here, if the Warriors are able to sweep here, what is it, on the 21st? That's a potential week.
That'd be huge.
Of that 6 days of them, you know, I'm sure there'll be some rest days fit in there, but you know,
now we're all going to Cabo, Medina. We're going to Cabo.
I mean, that would be unbelievable. And it's like, you know, you have to account for something that may happen in this first round series against the Clippers. But say everything is as equal as it is going in, it's not like they exactly need the rest. So I think at some point they might start getting restless if it's 6 days. But better to have that problem than having the whole they went through 7 games and, you know, all of a sudden the next day they have to play another series and they feel worn down.
Right. Yeah. No, the Warriors will definitely have some intense scrimmages if that goes down. And that is my guesstimation, though. I hope it doesn't go down too much because I have to cover the NFL draft pretty much after this Warriors Clippers series is over. That's fine. But don't make me go cover baseball for an extended period of time like that. That'd be really depressing. Let's get this over with as fast as possible, and let's see what happens in that Utah-Houston series. Good basketball for sure. This is the best time of the year. NBA playoffs. Mark Medina and I will be everywhere with this Golden State Warriors team, pumping out the content on the daily. You guys should subscribe. We still have the Clay deal. That's 11 months for 11 cents a day to get the wonderful East Bay Times or the fantastic San Jose Mercury News. Get that subscription. Send us your subscription info to the newspaper, not the podcast. It's very easy to subscribe to a podcast. It takes a little bit of money to subscribe to a newspaper. We understand that you love the podcast. We need you to love the written content too. Otherwise, we're not going to be doing the podcast. so send us the subscription, you know, your subscription confirmation for the San Jose Mercury News, the East Bay Times, whatever Bay Area News Group affiliate you subscribe to, and we'll hit you up with some goodies. And remember to subscribe, rate, share. We are on all of the major platforms here on the Warriors HQ podcast. If you liked what you heard, tell a friend or two. Follow Mark Medina on Twitter, MarkG_Medina. If you don't already follow him, what the hell are you doing? You can follow me on Twitter. I don't know why you would, but you could. At D Kurtenbach, DKURTENBACH. Mark, you got anything else to plug?
I think you covered it all, but you know, beyond the value of getting good insight from us on the Warriors, you follow us on Twitter. That's when you can DM us the receipts of your subscription confirmation,
send
and
then
you'll get
receipts.
Some good gifts along the way.
Yeah, not gifts, not with a T, with a gifts with a T.
Yes,
I will send gifts though if you want. Mark, we got to book some flights. I'll talk to you on the other side, buddy.
All right, have a good one.